On today's episode of The Front Row, we are at the Silent Wings Museum here in the Hub City, and our special guests are Sharon McCullough, who is the curator of the museum, and Tanis Blunt, who is the education coordinator here at the Silent Wings Museum. Sharon, let me begin with you. Welcome to the program. Happy to have you. For folks who may not know, tell us a little bit about the Silent Wings Museum, how it's unique, what it is, how it came about to be here in Lubbock.
Cool. The Silent Wings Museum concentrates on the story of the World War II military glider program, and a little more specifically, the story of the American glider pilot. Lubbock was the location of South Plains Army Airfield, which is where about 80% of the 7,500 glider pilots during World War II had advanced glider training, learned to fly that big cargo glider. And so the Silent Wings Museum is located here because a lot of those glider pilots remembered that training, remembered that time they had spent in Lubbock. Some of them met their wives and girlfriends here. And so they had real ties to this area because of that training, because of that connection. And when they wanted to make sure that their story would be told in a museum that would stand alone and tell just their story, this was the place that they chose to work with the city of Lubbock to get the Silent Wings Museum established.
Right. And how long have you been here?
The museum's been here in Lubbock since 2002. They actually ran it as a volunteer museum in a little airport building in Terrell, Texas, on the Terrell Airport, from about 1984 until 1999 or so. So they had a real vested interest in making sure that they would pass it on to a larger entity. So the museum's been around since 1984, been here since 2002.
Right. And it's located basically on the grounds of the Lubbock International Airport. It's
correct.
Right adjacent to that, so people can find it easily right off the interstate, right?
Easily. Yeah, it's the airport's exit 8, we're exit 9. So You just look for the big C-47 and the big G-wings on the side of what was the Lubbock Airport Terminal. Our building was built in 1950 after the military training ceased after World War II, and this building is the airport terminal building that a lot of people remember going in and out of Lubbock in the 50s, 60s, and really early 70s.
Right. Okay. Tanis Blunt, we're talking about gliders. Now, that's not something that I guess would be on everybody's radar, I suppose to say. Tell us a little bit about the glider and what that's all about in World War II.
All right, so Hap Arnold saw how successful the Germans were in bringing in supplies and men behind enemy lines with a glider that's silent. And he said, we need to replicate that. And so we did. We established a group of people who took care of inventing our Jeep with wings. And our glider pilots were tasked with being that supply chain for our soldiers on the ground. When we think of gliders now, we're thinking of a one-person experience. That is not what a CG-4A glider is, right? You take a look at it and it's a behemoth, but it had a very specific job. Let's get these supplies and these men on the ground so that we're continuing our war effort. One of the things that makes us so unique is this idea of combat flight with a glider coming in silent, no engines, and no protection. You know, you think about that, and these men, when they talk about glider pilots having guts, the idea of flying behind enemy lines, landing in what is probably going to be a crash situation, to under enemy flag to get these guys or the supplies in that we're going to need. This is a really unique story and a totally different idea than what most people who are thinking about gliders would envision.
Right. And Sharon, did this work the same way that a glider works today? I mean, in the field, how did they do it?
Well, the principle is the same. You have a engineless aircraft that's towed into the vicinity of a landing zone or a place where they want to glide into by a powered aircraft. In our case, it's a C-47 out front, maybe a C-60. A twin-engine cargo aircraft is really good for pulling a CG-4A glider close to that landing zone. You release, you glide in. The difference between a sailplane or a sport glider today and the CG-4A of World War II is that you can launch a sport glider and soar all you want, catch a thermal, do a thing. You know, the Air Force Academy cadets that do part of their soaring training can stay up there for hours. But the CG-4A is not made to do that. It is made to get within undertow, a mile or so of that landing zone, release, and then come down kind of hard and fast through enemy fire and make that landing. So the difference is how much lollygagging you want to do up in the air. You don't want to be up in a CG-4A trying to do spins and loops and stuff like that, but you can do it in a sport glider.
Right.
So the big difference is how those gliders were intended to be used, and they were designed to glide, but to glide for a different purpose. The CG-4A is very boxy. It has a very substantial wing structure. A sport glider is very small and has a flexible wing structure. So they're built for, the CG-4A is built for work.
Right, yeah, so, sure. And that work, Tanis, I guess, would be what? Troop transport, maybe? Supplies like ammunition and vehicles? What
exactly.
What would all of that be?
Okay, so yes, we're going to take infantry into battle zones. We're also going to take jeeps, food, ammunition, mules into Burma. We hit Burma and went, our jeeps aren't working too great. And so we sent in mules on the CG-4A. And so anything that related to our supply line that we needed to get back there behind to our troops and to enable them to continue on was delivered by these guys. In fact, in several of our different films and interviews with our pilots, you will hear them and the paratroopers that they often delivered to would say, yeah, we needed it, and it got here exactly when we needed it. The Battle of the Bulge being the one that immediately comes to mind, where we're dropping off ammunition and 2 minutes later it's in weapons, we're ready to go. So they were providing supplies that were needed instantaneously often, or bringing in the supplies to create runways for larger aircraft to be able to get up and in the air in for different operations.
So all kinds of supplies.
Everything. Okay. If you could put it, if it was something you would transport, our guys were probably going to drop it off somewhere at some time.
Well, there is a current exhibition here at the Silent Wings Museum, and Sharon, you're the curator of the museum. So describe to us what you have currently up for people to see.
So the current exhibit will be up through April 2024, and its theme this year concentrates on how the CG-4A was manufactured, who was doing that manufacturing, and how that was being accomplished. It's called From Promise to Production. So we're talking about how Hap Arnold said he wanted a Jeep with wings, and how Waco Aircraft Company translate that into a very serviceable, very tough delivery vehicle to deliver those things. So From Promise to Production concentrates on the whys and the hows of that manufacturing process. We have a very large section about the different manufacturers, the 16 different contractors who built the CG-4A. A section about the subcontractors who built components for the CG-4A. Some people built a wing structure and then sent it to a manufacturer. Some of them built fuselages or cargo floors or benches for the inside of the glider. All of those subcontractors are also a really important part of that process. And one of the things that we've found that people kind of seem to connect with the exhibit is that idea of that teamwork and that symbiotic relationship between a manufacturer and their workers, or the subcontractor and the women who would learn how to weld because that's what the subcontractor needed to be done. So this exhibit is telling that story of those men and women who built the gliders.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Who was the designer? Who came up with the idea of how this was going to work?
A. Francis RCA was the lead designer at Waco Aircraft Company for late 20s into the 50s and 60s, but at the time that they got the mandate from the United States Army Air Forces that they wanted a Jeep with wings, a delivery vehicle, RCA was the one who sat down and sketched out what that would actually look like and then started to put together the engineering part. What's the wing load supposed to be like? What's the gear going to be? And so he and his team, and he had a a team of engineers at WACO put together that proposal. And that proposal went to the United States Army Air Forces in late 1941, early 1942. Mm-hmm. And that got approved. And so everybody calls it a WACO CG-4A because that's the designer. It's for Weaver Aircraft Company of Ohio is WACO. But it was RCA's team that came up with that design, and then that design got given out to all of those contractors. So WACO built about 1,400 of the CG-4A gliders. Other manufacturers outstripped them in terms of production, because what was happening with WACO was that all of these little manufacturers were making trips to Ohio and asking them questions. Do you think we could change a little thing here? No. Yeah. So WACO's team was being inundated the entire time that the CG-4A was in production with questions and comments and improvements. And RCA and his team were constantly redrawing those 1,500 schematics. So they were very, very busy the whole time. And the CG-4A didn't evolve very much in its basic design, but it evolved in some efficiencies and some little bits that were being improved. So WACO was the designer of record, and they were also a manufacturer. But their main task was for RCA to make sure the CG-4A was going to work.
Right. Yeah. Tanis, who were some of the people who got big contracts?
Well, Ford Motor Company actually created the largest amount of CG-4As for us. Our kids like to hear about that because they can envision a Ford truck. They can envision the Ford car at their house. And then we talk about how Ford refitted their plants so that they could create these CG-4As for us. Northwestern Aeronautical Corporation, Commonwealth Aircraft Corporation. One of my favorites is the Gibson Refrigerator Company. And Steinway actually got in on doing some parts for us. You know, they are famous for their beautiful pianos, but they are incredible with woodwork. And so they got really involved in creating parts and different parts and aspects for it. We're all familiar with Cessna. Cessna did a few, not a whole lot in the long and short of it, but they did a few of those. So we have several different companies that did that to varying different levels of success. To include the National Aircraft Corporation, who only made one. But like we said, RCA is fielding all of these different people saying, well, let's make it just a little bit different. And one of the things that was so important was that they build to the specs they were given exactly. And keep in mind, the majority of our workforce is going to be women who have not used these tools before, who are just now being trained. And our men's lives were in their hands, getting up in the air and getting back down again. And so some of the companies were super successful in meeting those requirements, others not so much. To include needing to have inspectors, making sure that we were following all those procedures, that every part was reliable. Those laws and those rules for inspecting and ensuring those parts were safe really in this process are going to start solidifying how important that is across all industries after World War II, because of the problems that they did have when they were building and the accidents that they had in the process. It's never a good thing when you lose someone in an accident, but when you lose your city council in one accident, then you start rethinking, how do we ensure that everyone going up in these are safe? And so all those little parts become so important, all those small companies.
Pratt Reed got a CG-4A contract. Now, technically, we're not supposed to give a contract to someone who's already making aircraft for the United States Army Air Forces, because that would, now you got them making two disparate types of aircraft. But Pratt Reed and Company in Deep River, Connecticut, got a CG-4A contract. because they pitched that they could build it quickly because they had people that already knew how to build aircraft. They only made about 900 of them. And then very quickly they realized that it was pulling away from their capacity to make other things. And so they didn't get a renewed contract. But several of the aircraft company that did get an initial contract, it was pretty quickly obvious that they have two different assembly lines going on for two very different aircraft. And that's the reason that most Ford Motor Company built nearly 5,000 of the 14,000 that were built. And Commonwealth was just making CG4As at their plant in St. Louis. So they very quickly realized they needed a specialized assembly line, and they needed it to just be making CG4A gliders. Cessna had a contract, weren't as successful as they thought they were going to be.
Okay, so you've said several things that have led up to what I really want to get into, talking about a refrigerator company, a piano manufacturing company, retooling, different assembly lines. Okay, so what's the story about how companies building one thing retooled to do something entirely different than what they do for their jobs?
Isn't it amazing? Yeah, that's. I think that's one of the most encouraging things that we see come out of World War II across the board, mm-hmm. is this desire of the entire population in the U.S. to do whatever it takes to be successful. And that's what we see with these companies. You think about it, and the women who worked in the Pittsburgh pickling factory to help make components of the CG4A, you're going, why would we redo a pickling factory? Why would we reframe a baby food making company? And yet everyone doing this, the mindset is whatever it takes. And this idea of we have a factory, we have the components and the ability to restructure to be able to help, so let's just get it done. And I think that, anytime we think about the people that we remember from World War II, it's that attitude of whatever it takes for the end result that we're looking for, we will do. And I think this is such a beautiful example of that pioneer spirit and of that idea of this is the right thing to do, and so we're just going to do it. And so Sharon has more information about how they did that.
Yeah, so what do you do?
So we were talking about Pratt Reed and Company. Pratt Reed and Company is a piano manufacturer in World War II, and it was that portion of Pratt Reed and Company in Deep River, Connecticut, that got the contract for the CG4A, because they had people that knew how to build things with laminated wooden structures, knew how to build things that have complicated joins, cabinetry, that sort of thing. And the same thing with Steinway, that was providing benches and cockpit structures for general aircraft. But Pratt Reed and Company is kind of a good example, because they actually established an aeronautical division, and it was that aeronautical division that took skilled piano makers and retrained them to build CG4A gliders. So they dropped their piano production for the duration of the war, and these people that had mad skills in making pianos and components for pianos realized that they were just going to have to step back from that and do this different kind of work. And most of the manufacturers that were repurposed, like Ford, like even Waco, because they repurposed an assembly line, but especially Ford, they just dropped what they were doing and started making gliders. And a lot of women in particular, dropped what they were doing at home, made meat peanut butter sandwiches for the kids, and learned how to weld.
Yeah, went to work.
Went to work. Even though it might have been terribly inconvenient, or they didn't think they would know how to do it, they made sure that they were going to do those welds correctly. Commonwealth Aviation in St. Louis set up shop in what was the fairgrounds, the stockyard grounds, with all the buildings for showing animals and stuff like that. And the men and women who came to work there, they couldn't just jump into building the CG4A. They had to build a factory first all the production fixtures had to be made, all that. So there was a big commitment to starting from scratch with some of these manufacturers, and a big commitment to making sure that we're maybe never going to make this product again, but for the duration of the conflicts, we're going to build this humongous thing we've never even seen before.
Right. Yeah. Wow, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. But it also explains why, in wartime, you can't just go out and buy a Steinway piano.
Correct.
Because nobody's making them. They're doing something else.
You can't buy a Ford anymore, right. A brand new Ford, because the plant in Iron Mountain that used to make the Woody automobile, it's making CG4A gliders.
Right, right. Just changes the entire economy.
It does.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah, and for so many of these women going into this workforce, one, we haven't had them in the workforce, and we definitely haven't had them building in the workforce previously. So now they're doing that, but they're doing it in secrecy. You know, I'm building under the Ford Motor Company because I don't want you to know that I'm building things for the war effort.
For a glider, sure.
And so we have these women who, not and men, but mostly women, who are going into this workforce, learning these skills, learning to work in a factory, contributing to the organization's setup for the assembly line, being able to say, guys, this isn't the best idea. It will be more efficient if we run it this way. Coming from women who had never worked in that kind of a field before, you look at that and you just say, these people are remarkable, you know? And how much can we learn from them?
Right. And this is like a societal change too.
Right.
You have women coming into the workforce, making a whole change, and it's changed forever.
Right.
You know, I mean, the whole idea of who the workforce can be is now different.
There was a young woman, and I can't remember her name, it's on one of the panels, who was brought in to one of the manufacturers, and she had an engineering degree. She fought her way through college and gotten her degree, but nobody would hire her. And then suddenly a manufacturer said, wait, you could probably run this engineering department if only you weren't a girl. And she had to prove that she could run the engineering department even if she was a girl, because all the engineers were going somewhere else, going overseas. So she got her opportunity, and I can't remember which manufacturer it was, but she got her opportunity to show that she knew what she was doing and it was going to be just great, and she never looked back.
Well, and
she continued on in that field.
And it's those stories that fall into our Women Working program here for the next 3 months, 4 months, January through May, where we're doing, we're actually watching a documentary of the women in the Pittsburgh facility.
Heinz,
sorry.
That's right.
The Heinz facility, who were making parts for the CG4A, and their personal experience and how they felt about that. And so that program coming in January and then March and May, taking a look at the firsthand account of it. You know, we're getting to a point where we're not getting so many firsthand accounts anymore.
Right, sure.
But this documentary that has been made and is available to us is allowing us to get a glimpse of that. Mm-hmm. We're super excited about that opportunity.
So the exhibition is called From Promise to Production. Tell us how long it's up, and how people can come and enjoy it and learn about all of this.
The exhibit is part of your experience at Silent Wings Museum. Once you pay the admission and get past the front desk, it's all available to you. The exhibit will run through the end of April. The magic happens when we switch out the exhibits in May. So until the end of April, Promise to Production will be available to anybody who visits the Silent Wings Museum, and the Women Working program will be posted on our Facebook page when those programs are happening.
Excellent. And times that people can come, what are the hours of the museum?
Museum is open from 10 to 5, Tuesday through Saturday, and 1 to 5 on Sundays. So we're closed on Mondays and major city holidays.
Right.
But any other day of the week, we have open hours that they can come and experience that, right, and find out what the story of the American Glider Pilot was like.
Absolutely. And what's your web address?
SilentWingsMuseum.com.
Right. Wonderful. We're so grateful for our special guests, Sharon McCullough, who is the curator of the Silent Wings Museum, and Tanis Blunt, who is the education coordinator here at the museum as well. Thank you both for giving your time so graciously today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.